Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you hear the latest on the city of Gary rebuilding its servers following a ransomware attack. Brandon Smith reports local health officials across Indiana can no longer impose emergency rules stricter than the state. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Porter County Sheriff Dave Reynolds. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. A Gary City spokesman says a cybersecurity company is helping the city rebuild its servers after hackers recently targeted several of them in a ransomware attack. Gary spokesman Michael Gonzalez said Wednesday that the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security were notified about the attack. He declined to disclose when the attack was identified or which city departments were affected, citing an ongoing investigation. The Times reports the spokesman also declined to say whether the city paid a ransom following the ransomware attack in which hackers lock up computer data and demand ransom payments in order to give it back.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
A former Northwest Indiana union official was recently sentenced to more than 4 years in prison for extortion after an assault on non-union workers. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports it started when members of a local union found out work was being done without union workers in the area.
According to the Department of Justice, 70-year-old Thomas Williamson Jr. learned that a non-union company was working on a church in Dyer, Indiana. Investigators say he considered it to be in the Iron Worker Local 395's territory. Williamson attempted to halt construction at the church by threatening workers. When they refused, he returned the next day with members of the union and carried out what the DOJ describes as a brutal and coordinated assault on non-union workers. Both Williamson and former union president Jeffrey Veach are sentenced to prison. Upon release, federal law bars them from union positions for at least 13 years. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
A judge has overturned a man's conviction in the 1980 fatal shooting of an off-duty Hammond police officer because prosecutors failed to disclose evidence that could have helped his case. Lake County Criminal Court Judge Salvador Vasquez set aside James Hill Jr.'s murder conviction Tuesday after a prosecutor and an attorney for the 58-year-old Gary man filed a joint motion. The Times reports that the two sides say prosecutors failed to disclose evidence that was exculpatory or could have been used to test witnesses' credibility. Hill was convicted in 2018 of murder in the November 1980 killing of Officer Lawrence Pukalik. A prosecutor says he plans to retry Hill for Pukalik's death.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Local health officials across Indiana can no longer impose emergency rules stricter than the state's after Republicans overrode the governor's veto. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports that local legislative bodies, county commissioners, or city councils will have to enact those restrictions instead.
The bill arose after Hoosiers complained to their lawmakers that local health officials went too far during the COVID-19 pandemic, shutting down or restricting some businesses. Republican Senator Chris Garten says those sorts of decisions are too powerful for unelected officials to make on their own.
I would contend that actions and decisions of such magnitude should have a check and balance.
But Democrats call the bill an unwise overreaction. Senator Shelley Yoder says health decisions should be made by experts, the local health officials.
What this veto override would do would be to introduce more bureaucratic and political pressures and putting Hoosiers' health at risk.
The bill now takes immediate effect. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Advocates for nursing home residents say they worry a new Indiana law expanding COVID-19 liability protections for healthcare providers will effectively block many lawsuits over neglect and substandard treatment that were not caused by the pandemic. The new law applies retroactively to when Indiana's first COVID-19 infections were reported in March 2020. The nursing home industry argues it will keep facilities financially viable by shielding them from a potential flood of coronavirus-related lawsuits. Critics of the law, however, maintain it lets nursing homes escape responsibility for deaths and injuries caused by problems that preceded the pandemic, such as inadequate staffing.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Teachers and other employees of the Fort Wayne Community Schools will receive payments of up to $2,000 for working during the pandemic. The Journal Gazette reports the school board there on Monday unanimously approved applying about $7 million in federal coronavirus relief dollars to employee stipends of $1,000, $1,500, or $2,000. Administrators and salaried staff, including teachers, will receive the highest amount. Leaders in the East Allen County Schools and Northwest Allen County Schools recently approved similar payments of between $500 and $1,000 for their employees.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Restaurants that were temporarily able to sell alcohol for carryout during the pandemic get to do so permanently after June. Some restaurants were only allowed to sell alcohol if people drank it in the establishment. Governor Eric Holcomb temporarily eliminated those rules during the pandemic to help businesses survive. Now, Holcomb is getting rid of those temporary policies effective June 30th. And that's when new provisions created by lawmakers this year will take effect. Restaurants subject to the new law can sell alcohol for carryout within certain parameters. That includes requirements like the restaurant employee taking the alcohol out to a car must be at least 21 years old. The area where the alcohol is being picked up must be well lit and within view of the restaurant's main entrance, and the restaurant can only sell alcohol for carryout if the customer also purchased a meal for carryout.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
If your favorite restaurant is out of chicken wings or chicken sandwiches lately, there are a few factors at play. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Adam Pinsker reports.
The brutal winter storm that paralyzed much of Texas earlier this year is partially to blame for a shortage in chicken, since the type of poultry raised in Texas and other southern states usually ends up in restaurants. President of the Indiana Poultry Association, Rebecca Yonaskin, says interruptions in the supply and production process due to the coronavirus also had an effect.
People kept going through the drive-thrus at a lot of those places, so I just don't think the chicken has seen quite the dip of consumption that some other parts of the industry have seen.
Indiana has two facilities that process much of the chicken that is served at fast food restaurants. The state is also number two in egg production. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Adam Pinsker.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The only school funding referendum up for consideration this spring failed to win voter approval. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports it's the first time only one school corporation in Indiana has sought referendum approval during spring elections in the past decade.
It was Elkhart Community Schools' second referendum try in the past 2 years. In 2019, the district proposed a measure to replace an existing tax. It also failed. The funding would have gone toward teacher compensation and employee benefits, as well as transportation costs for students. Elkhart is expected to see a boost in funding under the state's next 2-year budget, as well as federal COVID-19 relief. But the referendum would have provided a sustainable resource for the school corporation for the next 8 years. In a video message to employees, Superintendent Steve Tallheimer says he's heartbroken with the result. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana is among 7 states selected to pilot a federal initiative to increase employment for those experiencing mental health conditions. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports the Department of Labor is calling it the Aspire Initiative.
Aspire stands for Advancing State Policy Integration for Recovery and Employment. The goal is to help people with mental health conditions get and stay in jobs where they're paid competitive wages in a traditional workplace setting. Indiana won't receive federal funding, but will receive technical assistance to carry out a statewide plan. Jennifer Sheehy at DOL's Office of Disability Employment Policy says many states applied, but reviewers were impressed that Indiana's application viewed employment as a step in recovery.
It sounded like a very holistic approach to not only dealing with the person, but also within the state structures.
The National Alliance on Mental Illness estimates roughly 80% of those receiving public mental health services in Indiana are unemployed. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana is set to become the latest state to bring back a requirement that unemployed workers will have to actively search for jobs to get benefits. It comes after businesses complained they can't find enough people to keep their doors open. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports, while some assume generous benefits are keeping people out of the workforce, the reality is more complicated.
Fran Hunter owns a neighborhood bar and grill called Hunter's Place on Main Street in Elkhart. She said she's had a now hiring sign up for weeks, and in that time, she's only had one person apply.
I've been here 37 years, and I've never, ever had a problem hiring help. But this has been really, really hard. I'm not getting applicants. I'm not getting anybody. Nobody.
Her theory why there's no applicants? Government programs designed to get people through the pandemic.
Unemployment's been extended again. Stimulus money again. You know, if you got a couple of kids, you're really getting a lot of stimulus money. And it's just, it's good for them, but it's bad for me.
Hunter's assumption is a common refrain from business owners. But Micah Pollack, a professor of economics at Indiana University Northwest, says plenty of studies have shown that unemployment benefits are not by and large keeping people from taking jobs. Instead, it boils down to wages.
I think it's kind of like a cop-out for business owners to say that because it puts the blame on the workers and that they don't take any responsibility for what's happening. I mean, if you know a couple hundred dollars a week is enough to convince a worker not to work for you, then I think you have to question what kind of work environment and pay are you offering.
Pollack says the hiring problems are simply more visible in the restaurant industry, where servers often rely on tips to make ends meet and now are on the front lines of dealing with the public during a public health crisis. But the pandemic isn't just affecting restaurants. It's affecting other, mostly in-person jobs, too.
Right now, more staying at home, taking care of kids, taking care of family members, don't want to go back to work. That's people that you can't hire and bring into work.
Crystal Nieves' family in southern Indiana is a perfect example of that. Their childcare fell through in the pandemic, and thanks to unemployment benefits, her husband can stay home to help with the kids. Case in point, the only time she could talk was while heading to pick up a child from school.
Sometimes I'm like, okay, you have to go get a job. But then whenever it was looking at the reality of things and how things would add up, it's like, okay, I guess you need to stay home for a little bit longer.
Nieves is still working full-time, training new hires at a poultry plant. So she knows firsthand her company is severely understaffed and desperate to hire workers. But until they find affordable childcare, her husband is better positioned at home.
I can see the people need to go back to work, but then I can see the other side of it's not that simple.
Nieves is conflicted, but she says it boils down to needing some predictability. That's the underlying factor economists say has caused all sorts of economic woes during the pandemic.
So there's so many variables that it's truly a day by day, week by week, moment by moment, what are we doing?
But not everyone feels as conflicted as Nieves. One Hoosier who worked at an automotive plant said the boost to benefits gave him financial stability for the first time in his life, and it freed him from a job where he didn't feel valued. We agreed not to use his name out of his fear he could lose unemployment benefits or not looking for work.
For me, it doesn't bother me at all. I feel like my labor's been exploited enough throughout my life. I don't mind taking a little bit back.
He hopes this moment, where workers are in high demand and short supply, could wake people up to labor issues he's noticed for some time. Issues like better wages and benefits, and simply just more respect.
You know, fellow workers in this country, we can rally together to get better conditions for everybody, because I think everybody can agree that workers deserve more of the pie.
Before that happens, federal unemployment programs for Hoosiers may get cut off earlier than expected. Governor Eric Holcomb is asking the Department of Workforce Development to do some research that'll help him decide if Indiana should follow other conservative states in opting out. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Porter County Sheriff Dave Reynolds.
Lawmakers in Indianapolis have passed along, and in turn, it's been signed by the governor, a new juvenile justice bill, and has some impact in Indiana on young teen offenders. Let's find out what kind of impact it might have here in Northwest Indiana and learn more from Porter County Sheriff Dave Reynolds with us today. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thank you for asking.
Well, from what do you understand, the measure that was authored by State Senator Karen Talion of Ogden Dunes and sponsored in part by Representative Reagan Hatcher of Gary has some interesting provisions. What do you understand that this measure is going to do for law enforcement in particular here in Northwest Indiana?
Well, I think what Senator Talion wanted to do is to there was a couple parts that she was pushing for. One is if a juvenile commits a crime, not a felony or violent crime, that they would not be held in a jail with adults. And there was also a section, I believe, on expungement. So after a year, after the juvenile reaches an adult, that juvenile can request his record be expunged. And, you know, I don't think most law enforcement officials would have any issues with that. In Porter County, you know, it has happened where we've had juveniles in our jail, but normally it's associated with a violent crime, a murder, or something along those, and that shouldn't be affected by that. And still, I think everybody needs to understand it. It's still controlled by the judge, so the judge can make the decision on what record should be expunged and why, and where they should be held. So, but I understand the whole premise behind it. You know, it's not this law wasn't passed just because of what we're doing in Porter County. It's throughout the whole state. So who knows what's going on throughout the state. So maybe in different counties, they've had juveniles in their jail on misdemeanors and, you know, and really that's pretty much unacceptable with us. I think what Senator Talion was trying to do was, you know, not stigmatize juveniles when they reach adulthood, to give them a chance to make it. So I don't think law enforcement, you know, well, we obviously no one really objected to it. The FOP, this ISA, the Indiana Sheriff Association, the chiefs of police, all supported the bill.
Do you think, Sheriff Reynolds, that maybe it's a case of, because we're looking at a statewide picture here with this particular measure, do you think that maybe in some counties, and we're thinking more of smaller counties with smaller physical jails, that maybe that they have to, because of the size of the jail, they may have to mingle juveniles in together with as much, at least they can separate them, with the adult population, and maybe there is the concern there?
I mean, that's possible, but even when in Porter County, we've had like we'd have a juvenile maybe charged with murder and they're 17.
Mm-hmm.
Now, theoretically, they're juvenile until they're waived. Even if they're in our facility, you know, we would do everything we can to separate them from, put them in a situation where they, you know, they're protected. But like you said, not every jail has that luxury of being able to do that. So I certainly believe that what was behind this this whole bill. And, you know, I think it passed out of the House Senate unanimously, so they, everybody voted for it. So
do you think there's a concern that maybe, at least to some lawmakers, I'm sure it probably came out during some of the discussion when the bill was being considered, about trying to find a way to get the issue of institutional racism out of the juvenile justice system, and this was just one step in that direction?
I mean, that's possible. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, all I know is what I know in Porter County, and, you know, I've never experienced that, but I know it exists. And I think, you know, a bill like this would certainly help that, you know, or prevent that from occurring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're lucky in Porter County because our criminal justice system, they all work very well together. You know, probation, prosecutor, judges, public defenders, PAC, but not every county has that luxury of that inner cooperation, you know, if you will. So I think what they are trying to do is prevent that from happening and do whatever they can to make sure it doesn't happen.
We're talking with Porter County Sheriff David Reynolds about among other things, issues that the General Assembly took up and passed in this past session. And one of them in particular was the juvenile justice bill. I know in general they've had some pretty good support for law enforcement to come out of the legislature. And this year was a good year, I understand.
Oh, absolutely. I've been involved. This is my 15th year as sheriff, and I've never seen the legislature. The General Assembly has always been receptive, but I think they really went out of their way to show, especially what was going on throughout the country with a lot of talk about defunding police. Why do we even need police? Take police out of the schools. And because of certain things that have happened in Atlanta and Minnesota. And the whole last year, we spoke with the Black Caucus group from Indiana, and we did a lot of lobbying on certain things that we'd like to see. And we heard what they wanted, too. So what I got from all of these meetings was what was going on in the country wasn't happening in Indiana. They wanted to support law enforcement, and they wanted to provide the resources that we needed, and they wanted certain things. They wanted to do away with chokeholds, and we don't do chokeholds. So it was, for us, it was an easy sell. I mean, we just took it out, you know, and so they liked that. And we were all about transparency and accountability, and that's what they want. So we presented a proposal that the state would really promote body cameras and car cameras and squad cars mm-hmm. and policemen. And I think you're going to see that actually funded in the future. Obviously, we talked about training. Our law enforcement academy up here, we use Hobart. It's a satellite of the academy, and it's very successful and very, very productive for us, our law enforcement agencies up here. But down in Plainfield, that facility, you know, was built in the 70s. It's fallen apart, and they passed legislation that is actually going to give that academy about $70 million. And that will help. Obviously, it was needed. One of the problems that we've talked about in the last year or two is really the prevalence of mental health, the problem in jails. You know, it's not really overcrowdedness, and it's not COVID, it's not substance abuse, it's mental health. And we really talked a lot to the governor's office and the General Assembly. And then this year, they passed some legislation that will help us in the jail. So just the mere fact that they're listening and they're trying to respond to some of our concerns was pretty exciting for all law enforcement that, you know, and I just believe that we're fortunate to live in this state because we have a lot of good things going on. You know, not to say that law enforcement people don't make mistakes, you know, but why should we be held accountable in Indiana and in Porter County because of some officer doing a bonehead thing in, you know, in Minnesota? Okay. And I think that's what you're seeing in a lot of different states, that they're reacting to that. And in Indiana, I just didn't see it, you know, but we did sit down and address concerns. A lot of legislation was passed this last session, but it was really the result of a lot of hard work over the whole year. And it was a lot of people that were involved. People from the Indiana Sheriff Association, you know, different sheriffs, you know, met with their own legislators and the General Assembly, in different committees throughout the summer. So we're very excited about what happened this year.
Well, Sheriff Reynolds, thank you for sharing time with us, telling us what you think about some of the measures and the work that the lawmakers in Indianapolis have done in this past session. And we'll look for changes as they come about. And we appreciate hearing what the Porter County view is about this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.